91.3 KXCI Tucson. Real people, real radio.
Good afternoon, and thanks for tuning in today. This is Aspen Green with my co-host, Kathy Harris, and we're bringing you Broad Perspectives Radio, a program by women, about women, but for everyone. And you can hear more of our programs by going to kxci.org and looking at our Broad Perspectives Radio page, and it's all updated. Today, we have someone on the show that will be of interest to every dog owner, Christine Ritchie, the founder of Bella Dog Psychology. It will be great to find out what goes on inside our dogs' bodies and minds to understand them better, right, Kathy?
Absolutely. I'm so excited about this program. As a seasoned dog behaviorist, Christine Ritchie is the heart, mind, and soul behind Bella Dog Psychology. Christine began training dogs professionally in 1994 in the state of Rhode Island. In 2012, she founded Bella Dog Psychology in Tucson. Yay! Today, she works across the United States and Canada, training and rehabilitating dogs from all backgrounds and situations. Christine's talents extend to nearly all areas of dog behavior, as she not only rehabilitates fearful and aggressive dogs, but also trains ADA-certified service animals, specializing in providing service for mobility and stability, epilepsy, diabetes, PTSD, and clinical anxiety. That covers a whole lot there. She corrects unwanted behaviors in adult dogs and even offers puppy training for new additions to the family. Christine, welcome to Broad Perspectives.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Well, we're so happy to have you here. I want to start with a question we ask all our guests. How did you end up in Tucson? I know you're not a native. Why did you come here?
Actually, my parents live here and getting on in years, and it's nice to be able to help with latter years, let's say. I raised my two daughters here. So it's a safe place. It's been good to me with the business, being able to work outside year round versus just in the good weather.
Yeah, those are all good reasons. You've been training dogs now for about 30 years. So tell us why and how did you get involved in dog training?
Well, first off, I eat trainers for breakfast. I work with the dog's mind. I fix what the trainers mess up in the dogs. Got my start following my daddy around as a kid. He's really the one that this wealth of information, where he held the life of a dog in a higher priority than most people. He was the one that rescued any animal, especially the dog. And I was raised essentially and babysat by his German Shepherd growing up.
Wow. And I think you probably, and many of us dog lovers, will say that we like dogs more than people most of the time.
So it sounds like best people.
Yeah. Yes. It sounds like your dad was one of those for sure. Well, tell us a little about your techniques. You say that you eat dog trainers for breakfast. I noticed doing research, there's all kinds of philosophies about the best way to train dogs. How would you describe your method?
A balanced method where I work with the dog's mind. I specialize in the early development of the puppy mind, kind of like babies in their first year of life. They have these milestones they have to make. Well, puppies have hundreds of milestones they have to make to grow into a balanced dog. Dogs aren't born vicious or reactive or exceptionally fearful. It's the two trauma cycles in their early developmental months that affect it. And what I do is I evaluate them and determine either what traumas happened or what windows of development were not met successfully. And then I go back and I meet them successfully. It doesn't happen overnight. Anybody that tells you they're going to take your dog and charge you thousands of dollars for 2 weeks and that they're going to change your dog, nothing happens in 2 weeks, because these behaviors didn't happen in 2 weeks in your dog. One behavior that's not desirable is just a symptom of a bigger imbalance in your dog's mind that I don't just correct it. I change the behavior in your dog. Dogs don't understand discipline. They'll understand a negative response to an action, but it doesn't fix what is causing that action. By simply using these tools that are supposed to be for teaching as a punishment base.
Okay, well, let's follow that a little bit, because the issue of aggressive dogs is a big one with dog owners. I was told not too long ago by one dog trainer that this kind of behavior never stops. You can only try to manage it. Would you agree with that?
Not for a millisecond, no. I have successfully turned around some of the most vicious cases sent to me from as far away as Chicago. People will send their dogs to me from all over the country as their last Hail Mary. I don't know if they think it's the federal witness program or not, but by the time they're ready to come pick up their dog and work with their dog on a follow through or have me fly back with their dog, I don't correct it. Like I said, it doesn't happen overnight, but I find what triggered it in the first place, what is causing it. And then I bring a whole balance of early developmental back into their adult life to change that behavior and make a more confident, balanced brain in the dog. And a lot of the times it's simply habit too, where the human needs to understand that, okay, the dog's in the habit of barking at that fence every time they walk by. Take a different path, change the habit, change the routine. Don't do a predictable routine.
Okay, just to get a little more specific, can you give us some stories about dogs? What kind of difficult behaviors they had that were successfully rehabilitated?
Gattuso. Gattuso, the Neapolitan Mastiff that I could use as an armrest when walking him. He was that big. His human couldn't even get close enough to feed him after a while and had a gun on him when I showed up. I didn't want to get shot. Told him to put the gun away because he was afraid for my life. This dog would attack to kill. I got the dog under wraps, got it back to my place, locked myself into a kennel with this dog with nothing but my MMA gloves on, no muzzle on the dog, to repeatedly have the dog attack me to learn the triggers. Found out that early in the puppy's developmental cycle, there was no human bond trust and there was food aggression. It all stemmed from food aggression and how the human dealt with it. It took almost a year, but he was successfully turned around and the family was able to take him in the house and love on him again as he was a pup, providing they followed through with what my teachings were with them. I'm only as successful with the dog as I am with the human associated with the dog.
Yeah, that's so important. And I will confess right now, the way I met Christine is I called her as a dog trainer because I have a dog that I couldn't walk in the morning because he was attacking other dogs and I couldn't handle him. He's strong. And I called Christine and in a very short time, I have to say, I took a walk with him this morning. We passed a few dogs. He barely even looked at him because I have changed. I am doing what Christine told me to do, which is very simple things, really. And this dog aggression thing in the streets is no longer a problem. But I think the important part is that it's us, not the dogs, that is the problem. And if we change our behavior, they will change theirs. You know, I was intrigued that you train dogs to detect seizures and blood sugar issues. I can't even imagine how you do that. I've heard that dogs can do that. Can you describe how that kind of dog would be trained?
Easier than you think. Just like you would train a dog to detect bombs and firearms, it's all scent training. When I get a request for an ADA service dog, first I learn the human's lifestyle. Then I pick the breed that's best suited to that lifestyle. I hand select the puppies that I deem are best for training. And it's all scent training because your body chemistry changes. I keep referring to people as humans, I'm sorry, but before the human has a seizure, their body goes into a chemical change. I train the dog to pick up on the scent of that chemical change in the human to predict when that human's gonna have a seizure, like an hour before. And the dog, whatever tell the human desires or the dog needs to do to alert the human needed to take a pill. It's all scent training, picking up that particular human's body chemistry change before the seizure happens, before the blood sugar spikes or drops. That dog is trained to pick up that human scent. And that's why it's so important when you see one of these ADA dogs out. The human may look perfectly normal and without a handicap, but that dog has a specific job that dog needs to stay focused on the human. You can't be petting the dog and reaching around the human to sneak a quick pet in. The dog is supposed to be focused on that human and their scent at all times.
It's hard not to pet a dog. You see these beautiful dogs, but if they have that harness on, you really should not pet them.
Or at least ask permission.
Yeah. Okay. So that's quite interesting how they detect what's going to happen. I didn't realize there was a scent difference. Now, what's the most frequent reason people call you for help with their dog?
Well, most frequent, I'd have to say there's a tie between reactiveness, where they deem their dog vicious when 99.9% of the dogs that are deemed vicious are just fearful. Their windows of development were not met because as humans, there's no such thing as a bad dog. And humans, 99% of the time, are only guilty of loving their dog to pieces. We don't deliberately set out to make our dog a problem child. We just unfortunately give them too much human emotion and too much human response to emotion versus responding in the canine psychology way, the way we should as their leader. When you have a fearful dog and you embrace the fear with a human reaction where it's okay, mommy's here, all you're doing is rewarding that dog's fearful behavior that is going to snowball into other areas of life, which again, dogs attack their fear. They don't run from their fear. That's why dogs chase cars. It's not to catch the tires, it's because they're afraid of them. Dogs will run into a burning building because they're afraid of the fire. They will attack the fire, not to say they're human as much as we'd like to think they would. No. So when a dog is showing fear or any kind of excitement or aggression towards, say, a front door, the last thing you want to do is reward it with either a treat or affection. You want to take a more firm, confident tone and settle back. There's no crying in baseball. Sit down, be quiet. The other one is the early puppy development where people just don't know where to begin. So they hire me to come in and set up their house and give them the whole structured environment that that puppy needs to grow up into.
Okay, this is really helpful. I'm thinking myself, of course, with my two dogs. I am constantly petting them, hugging them.
Oh, there's no need for to stop doing that. It's just at the timing of that.
Yeah, okay.
But I love my babies. Don't get me wrong. I love my babies like, ooh.
Well, one thing I can tell with the dog that I just described that has the aggressive behaviors or had, I could really see it was fear. It was all fear in his eyes. You know, when he attacks people, it's because he's afraid. And with a few simple techniques, he doesn't act like that anymore, but it is a fear-based thing. So what would you say is the biggest mistake people make with their dogs? You know, the thing that you want to get up on the rooftop and shout, for God's sake, stop doing this. What is that? I know there's something.
Oh, yes. Like I just said, stop embracing the fear. These dogs are not vicious. They're not aggressive. They just need a confident leader to feel protected. No dog will follow a leader that doesn't know where they're going or that doesn't show the confidence they need to lead. And it's so important on us. I mean, there is no such thing as the dominance theory where we have to flip a dog on his back and show it who's boss and growl in his face. No. That's been debunked a long time ago. But at the same time, we do have to show that we are confident individuals. We can't fake it, though. You know, I have attitude. I love coming into a person's house and having them unleash their two dogs on me in a gated area and say, we're going to test the mettle of this lady.
Now, who would do a thing like that?
But it was the highlight of my day.
I will admit, I'm that person who did that. Christine was coming over and she said, you know, don't feed them as much that morning. I want to see them angry, what they really look like. So she came through the gate. I opened the door and they just both charged at her.
I loved it.
Well, you handled it very well. Well, at this point, we're going to take a little music break and then we'll come back and talk more about some of these techniques. Aspen, what have we got for music today?
Well, we have a great song that I'm sure we're all familiar with. You picked Proud Mary by Tina Turner. And I'm going to ask you why you picked that song for today's show.
One, I'm a huge Tina Turner fan. She is a strong woman. She came up against adversity and she just succeeded. And I love the song.
That's a great reason. Many still associate Proud Mary with Tina Turner and her horn-packed 1970s arrangement. The song was actually written by Creedence Clearwater Revival frontman John Fogerty. On the day he received his discharge papers from the Army in 1967, in a celebratory mood, he began strumming the guitar and his rock blues anthem was born. And he said he wrote the song about a mythical riverboat cruising on a mythical river in a mythical time. And it was obvious that the metaphor was probably about leaving painful, stressful things that he left behind to a more tranquil and meaningful life. What the song represented to Tina, no doubt, changed depending on time and circumstance, but Proud Mary remained a visceral connection to her six-decade career. Its influence on musical stars of today continues to endure, and Beyoncé performed the classic track in 2005 when Tina was recognized at the Kennedy Center Honors in Washington, D.C., and she said, I'll never forget the first time I saw you perform, she said in her speech as she gazed up at Tina seated in the balcony. I'd never in my life seen a woman so powerful, so fearless, so fabulous. Tina had one word for the song. That's been a constant her entire life. And the word was freedom. And unfortunately, we lost her on May 24th, 2023. Let's give a listen to the song Proud Mary by Tina Turner. 91.3 KXCI Tucson. You're listening to Broad Perspectives Radio, and we're returning to our interview with Christine Ricci of Bella Dog Psychology.
Thanks for that great song. I never get tired of listening to Tina Turner. Christine, I believe you do take dogs into your own home if they need intensive work for some behavior issues. How do you decide what dogs need that kind of intensive help, and how long do they usually stay with you when that happens?
I initially go out and I evaluate the dog in his or her own home and surroundings, and actually also evaluating the humans and their ability to follow through with what the dog needs. If it's deeper than I feel as if the humans are able to adequately do, I will recommend the in-house board and train here. I'm getting on, and my goal is to teach the human to do it themselves, because once the dog is fully rehabbed here, I still need to retrain or redo the home life and teach the humans how to now happily function with their new brain on their dog. The dog's going to be the same dog. It's just going to be a more balanced, better behaved dog. But I have to teach the humans how to follow through things that need to be changed in the home that created the problem.
That was a lovely little tune in the background. What was that, Christine?
One of my nutcracker clocks. My house sometimes sounds like Cathedral Hall. A lot of grandfather clocks I have going off. I managed to shut off the ones that I could reach.
Well, I thought it was lovely. Thank you for
that. Thank you.
Well, I think that is your basic message, is that we, the dog owners, have to change. Well, just out of curiosity, like right this moment, how many dogs are living with you right now? Your own and other people's?
I have got two dogs and my stage dogs here. I have rescued three, and I've got three very reactive dogs staying with me for an intensive brat program rehab. Two of them, they live in the same household that tore into each other rather badly, putting one in jeopardy of his life. So rehabbing those two. Last night was a great night. They're both able to come out without muzzles and leashes and interact without attacking anything. And I've got another here for same issues, rehab of vicious or reactive behavior. See, I'm the only one that deals with reactive dogs.
Yeah, your life sounds pretty intense. Do you have any help with these dogs? Do you have time to do other things? Do you have a life?
I have tried getting help in here. However, not everybody has the ability to compartmentalize the fear. Because like I said before, you can't hide anything from a dog. And when your body goes into a state of fear, your body chemistry, they can smell it and it gives them more power. So when I've gotten help in here and people assure me, oh, I don't feel fear, I can do it. I do meditate, just to let you know to practice that. But the situations tend to reveal themselves that, no, that would have never happened if you weren't here. So it's hard for me to find somebody with the stones to get into the ring with a vicious dog with me without making it worse.
Okay. Well, you said you work with dogs all over the U.S. and Canada. How is it that you get referrals to such faraway places? It sounds like you must be pretty well known in the dog training field.
Well, I've never advertised. Some of the mental health clinics in San Diego, they have me on speed dial. I get referrals through doctors. I get referrals through veterinarians and word of mouth from past clients.
Okay. Is there any kind of dog that you will not work with?
When it comes to feral dogs, I draw the line at Chihuahuas. I've never seen a Chihuahua carry a person. So yeah, I'm going to draw the line at a Chihuahua. I mean, I'll help a Chihuahua, never hurt a Chihuahua, but there's a limit to what I will try to do for federal work. But no, there isn't an animal I won't train or help.
What do you mean by federal work?
Whether it be federal ADA work or bomb or gun detection.
Oh, okay. I see. Okay. What would you say the most difficult or challenging thing about the work you do?
Time. I need more time in my days. I could retire and not look back, but I can't, because I'm always drawn back in by that dog in need. And I know that nobody else is equipped to do it. And I can't stand the thought of a dog unnecessarily being abandoned or euthanized because I felt like sitting back and doing nothing. It's not in my DNA.
Yeah. And you probably can't save every dog in the world, I'm sure.
I had a dog, a miniature poodle, for almost 17 years, and he was just wonderful to me, and I loved him. But if you got near his food and he had the idea that you might be taking it away, this miniature poodle turned into a vicious animal.
Cujo.
I lived alone, so I just really never dealt with it. But once in a while, somebody would come over and think, oh my God, you have the most untrained dog, because they would do something with food. Is that something that you can change the behavior on?
Yes, that was Gattuso's whole base problem. That's what started the whole snowball effect, where the reactivity of the hoarding, the food hoarding, just spiraled into so many other areas of his behavior. It's like a tree growing roots underground. That is the hardest thing for anyone to fix in a dog, the food hoarding. It is easily preventable in the early stages, but once it is there, dogs get euthanized every day, even at the Humane Society, for it, because nobody knows how to fix it, but it can be fixed. It is so important. That is probably the most important thing to make sure that does not happen in your dog in the developmental stages, the food hoarding. It's the hardest thing to fix.
Wow. Okay. Well, we've asked you about the most difficult things about your job. What's the most rewarding thing?
Seeing a balanced dog and a happy human. That makes it all worthwhile. And don't think I don't get attached to every last dog that comes through here. I do. I cry ugly tears when they leave. And I form some lifelong relationships with the humans, that they are the best of the best. And I do stay in touch with every last one that comes through here, because I'm always on call. They need me. I don't care if it's been 10 years. They can pick up the phone and I'm there.
And as you know, I do pick up the phone and say, Christy. I just thought, what are we going to do with this dog? I love this dog, but I can't take him for a walk. And the first time I met Christine at a park, she took him and walked around the park with like a billion dogs. And my dog didn't even look at any of them. And it's like, oh my gosh, it's kind of amazing if you do the right things. Okay, so what's the most valuable advice you can give to dog owners?
Remember that we are supposed to be the intellectual ones, and the dogs are always going to respond on an instinctual level as a dog. Never treat a dog with human emotion. Yes, you love on your dog, love that dog till no end, but the timing of that affection is critical.
So if somebody calls you and says, oh my God, I don't know what to do with my dog, what's your procedure? What do you tell them? What do you do?
First, I ask, you know, what the problem is. I don't want to know too much about the dog, because I don't want to go in with a biased, you know, outlook on the dog. If the dog has got reactive issues, I ask if there's a child or baby in the house. If there is, generally they're put to the top of the list. Safety is paramount. And a child or toddler is the most fearful thing to a dog than you can imagine, because they're right there at eye level and they're unpredictable. Then I schedule a time without them telling me too much to go out and evaluate their dog, while instructing them to not feed and let me work with a hangry dog.
And how would someone contact you if they want to get help with their dog?
A lot of people fill out the questionnaire on either the website, or they call me and leave a message, and I'll always call them back.
Yeah. Okay.
Maybe not tomorrow, but I will get to calling them back.
Okay.
I just want to quickly mention that the website is belladogpsychology.com.
Yeah. Well, there's another billion questions I think we have for you, but unfortunately we're out of time. But I want to thank you so much for coming and talking about these things that are so important.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Unfortunately, we've come to the close of our show, but Christine Ritchie, thank you so much for coming and telling us about Bella Dog Psychology and the things you do for our furry best friends.
Thank you.
I had known you in the time that I had Peacer. It's interesting to hear how dogs think. And, you know, they say the only one you can change is yourself. So this is Aspen Green with Kathy Harris, and you've been listening to Broad Perspectives Radio, a program by women, about women, but for everyone. You can hear more of our shows on kxci.org on our Broad Perspectives Radio page. But for now, stay tuned, because next up, we have Boom Goddess Radio with Jennifer Davis Page. Enjoy your Sunday, and we'll talk with you next week.